Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Mo.
And I'm J.O.
And you're listening to Mojo and the Outsiders podcast, brought to you by Backwoods Adventure Mods.
Guys, welcome back to the podcast. Today, we've got someone super exciting on the show, Santiago. He's the owner of Rogue Van Company. If you've ever seen a custom van that makes you think, how do I get one of these? You can thank Santiago and his team for that. Before driving into the van life game, though, Santiago's journey was shaped by his roots. He's a world traveler, bringing a global perspective to everything he does, but his story doesn't stop there. Santiago comes from a long line of strong, resilient people who taught him the value of hard work and dedication, lessons he's carried with him as he runs Rogue Vans today. These days, he's not just building killer vans, he's running his business like a well-oiled machine. Santiago's journey is one of grit, passion, and a lot of hustle. So grab a seat, relax, and let's dive into this conversation with Santiago about his travels, his business, and everything in between. Hey guys, we have Santiago. He is the owner of Rogue Vans. Santiago, as far as, I mean, your overall, you know, life and business and everything, Ty's told me a ton about you and, you know, told me about all your travels and everything. Man, as far as like traveling, what kind of started that passion?
Dude, we're just jumping right in.
Into it.
Yeah, I always hate starting it. So here, Mo, let's let you start.
No, I think it was perfect, man. I think it was perfect. But I mean, kind of like what J.O. touched on, you know, I've never really got to sit down with you, you know, little bit of Mountain West. I got to sit down with you, you know, and you were telling us about your uncle, you know, who had you know, came to this country, done well for himself and everything. And you were showing us his store and you were so proud of this, you know. And so that's kind of the backstory I have on you, but you had told me that you, you know, you didn't always live here and grow up, you know, in one place and stuff like that. So, yeah, how'd you land here in beautiful San Diego and what's maybe been one of your other favorite places along the way?
I told you about Uncle Natty.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember doing that. Man.
Yeah, you showed us the video. Yeah.
Old video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's walking through the store.
That's epic.
It's very cool.
Yeah, so that's really funny. So for those of you that don't know, I got these two guys down at my shop here, Rogue Van Company, San Diego, California. They're coming to visit. We're doing this podcast. I'm stoked.
Mojo on the road.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, my Uncle Natty, that's really funny. So I have family in California. I didn't grow up in California. I grew up outside Chicago. And my Uncle Natty, though, immigrated from Egypt to Southern California, Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
And back in the 80s, he opened up a chain of liquor stores called Natty's Liquor. And perfect. Natty's Liquor was, I mean, dude, like back then, it was the shit.
Yeah.
And like I showed you guys that video.
Yeah.
And it's like he's got just aisles upon aisles of like every liquor, cigarette.
Yeah.
Brand, everything that you could ever want. And it was the 80s, so you could, their cartons were on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just a totally different world. And then the video like subtly pans down to him under the counter, and there's just like a giant magnum. This is huge, like cannon of a gun, just like sitting under the counter.
Also appropriate for the 80s, right? You have to have the magnum behind the register.
Oh, for sure.
Well, watching the video is like a little time capsule. You know, it's funny watching it, and yeah, you just saw like carton of cigarettes just right on the counter, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
the shelving and everything. Well, and the customer's stoked to be there, right? You know, because it wasn't like it was a commercial or shot when nobody was there. You know, they had people in the store. Everybody's happy, you know, to be at Natty's Liquor getting their fixings.
Yeah. Matt Filleta, my cousin, if you hear this, you should publish that video on YouTube. People can watch it.
Oh, definitely. It's a gem for sure.
But anyway, yeah, so Natty's Liquor, me, no, they don't really have a lot in common. But
well, it just seemed like an interesting part of your past. Like I said, the way you were showing it to us seemed very cool. But so you're from Chicago then. Tell us how this differs. You know, how did you land here then if you're from there?
That's a long story. you know, I grew up really loving, it's actually kind of funny to say, but I actually grew up like just wanting to be like High Plains Drifter. Yeah. I wanted to be like a hobo. I wanted to ride freight trains. As a kid, I thought that was the most amazing thing ever. Yeah. Like I would watch videos of like dudes hopping trains and tying their belts to, you know, support rails and riding on the tops of boxcars through the rain. You know, I'd watch, you know, like this, all like the big generation of people after the Great Depression that just like stayed on the road and just, you know, moved. Yeah. I heavily romanticized that as a kid, and I thought it was incredible. And when I was 18, I just put a backpack on. I graduated high school. 10 days after I graduated high school, I went out to the highway. I stuck my thumb out, and I did not stop traveling for the better part of like 6-7 years.
Holy cow.
Man. Yeah. So I went all over the country. I hitchhiked over 28,000 miles those first 2 years. Went all over. I ended up, I went over to India when I was 19. And went all over there, and like I didn't like backpack like traditional people backpack. I was literally living on like $1-$2 a day.
Holy cow.
I would just pick up work doing whatever I could. I did like walking tours in Kashmir with like this family. I did just like random stuff.
Whatever somebody's needing that day, right?
Yeah. And I hitchhiked, from Ladakh to Manali, which they say is the tallest road in the world. And I was 19. I was just like, I just had really big balls, and I was just like, I'm fucking doing this. And I was totally alone, you know, and I like, I didn't even have like a sleeping bag or anything. I just did it. And luckily I got picked up by like some truckers.
Yeah.
And they ended up taking me through the mountains with them. And it was a wild ride, dude.
Right.
I had so many interesting experiences there. I don't want to dive like how deep I can dive into that. Cause it's just like
as much as you want.
Crazy, man. That's crazy. But, I mean, so how long did you spend over there before you came back? Did you just,
that year I was in India for almost like three months, not a super long time. And then I came back to the States. I had the bug. I hitchhiked to Portland. From Portland, I hitchhiked to LA with my friend Laura. We got a one-way flight to Managua, Nicaragua. And then I basically spent the better part of like the next like 6 years in Latin America.
Yeah. That's insane. And really, it's my, like, especially in my early 20s, I always fantasized, you know, about just traveling around. But I had a child, you know, at a very young age, so I wasn't able to do that. But, you know, and it's crazy because I used to follow people all the time that, you know, were doing that exact same thing. And I'd always wonder, like, how are they doing this? You know, like, how can they make this work? And really, it sounds like it's just, I don't want to say sacrifice because I don't really feel like that's the right word, but I guess it'd be like minimalism. You know, you just make do with the littlest amount as possible. And I guess that's how you can make it work. You know,
there's a lot of trust. You just kind of trust that things are going to fall into place.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you don't eat a lot.
Yeah.
You don't eat a lot.
Yeah.
Dude, like I'm like 235 right now, 240.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm 6'2", pretty solid person. Yeah,
right.
Back then, I was like 155, 160.
Holy cow.
I was like a twig.
Yeah. I can't even imagine that.
Oh, I was like a twig, dude. I mean, some days I would only eat like a meal. And
that's nuts.
And it was like that for a long, long time.
Yeah,
I was like that for most of my 20s, actually. And yeah, I mean, in Latin America, I did a lot of different things. I moto toured Latin America later on. I bike toured almost all of Central America, hitchhiked almost all of Central America, took just chicken buses everywhere. Just like, I started a leather goods company there. I was, that's how I was like making a living, was just like selling my leather goods on the street
and
like hanging out with other, like kind of street urchin type like people. And, you know, I got to, I just basically, I got to a certain point where I was like, I've kind of fully dove into that life. And then I was, you know, I talked about how my uncle is from Egypt. My parents are also from Egypt. I'm completely Egyptian. And, you know, my parents came to this country because they wanted, you know, something better for their kids. Like they faced immense diversity, and adversity, sorry. They faced immense adversity in Egypt, and they had a really tough time. My family's Coptic. So they're, that's like old Egyptian Orthodox Christian. And, my family had just like, you know, a lot of persecution growing up in, in the Middle East. And it was really tough. And they lived as like second class citizens. They're from a neighborhood called Shubra, which is basically Cairo's ghetto. And that's there where it's a, but it's a big like Coptic sector of the city. And, I just, I was like, you know, I was basically like living like a street urchin in Central America. And, you know, I kind of was like, you know what? I don't think my parents sacrificed everything that they sacrificed for me, for this to be my life. And
to almost go back to it,
And I kind of, came to my senses a little bit, and I was like, I want to do something better for me and for, you know, my family. And I want to, you know, I want to kind of make something of myself. So I moved back to the States. I went to school in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, but the, but then I basically just ended up, continuing doing my leather goods business. And, you know, that's kind of what got me into Vans is I was touring around the country, with my, my van kind of filled with all my leather goods going for, to different like festivals and fairs and events and stuff like that. And no one at the time, I mean, 20, like 14, 15, 16, 17, like nobody was really like, I couldn't like, I would, you know, there was nothing for me to buy. There's nothing for me to like, no model to follow. You know, like I just knew that I wanted a bed and I needed storage and I needed to fit all these bins filled with leather. And like, so I just, one of my buddies actually was visiting, from Guatemala, and him and I, like in my, my driveway of the house that I was living in Portland, we just built a van together. And that van, I posted a bunch of photos of it. And I was like, oh, look at this thing. And dude, people flipped out. Unlike my personal Facebook, I had like thousands of likes. And it, I mean, this is before, this is before Facebook was, you know, hard to, you know, it wasn't really monetized yet the way that it is now. So like you, a regular person could post something, and if that content was actually interesting, Facebook would be like, oh, people like this. Let's show it to more people. Oh, people would like this. Let's make it so no one sees it.
Absolutely. I
better put a filter on that. He may grow.
We're obviously all frustrated by that. But anyway, so, you know, I got this huge boost of confidence. I ended up selling that van. I got another one. And at the start of 2018, I was like, I'm going to start a van company. And I flew to the East Coast because I had done a lot of, I'd bought vans on the East Coast in the past. I was staying with my, my cousin Andrew in Brooklyn, and his wife Candia is a public defender in, in Brooklyn. And dude, she was like, you need to keep your car, my card with you at all times. You are going to get arrested. I was like, why? Well, I was literally like crisscrossing, New England and mostly like New York. I went to Long Island. I popped down to Philly. I was just Connecticut. I was going all over the East Coast buying vans for like super cheap. These old plumber vans, you know, like construction vans. None of them had plates. Parking them on the street in New York City, moving them, It was just this, and she thought for sure I was going to get busted because I'm driving on all these vans without plates.
Yeah, boarding all the vans on the East Coast, right? Yeah. Like piling them up, just stacking them in there. Now, was your first van, what was that based off of? Were you in like an Econoline? Is this a Sprinter, Freightliner?
My first van was a 2002 T1N Sprinter, low roof, 158 wheelbase. Okay. It was the first year that the Sprinter was available in the United States.
Yeah.
It was in 2002. So I got the first year. That thing ended up having like a crazy death wobble.
Oh.
and nothing I did. I replaced the drive line, the motor mounts.
Yeah.
Like nothing I did got rid of that death wobble. I just couldn't figure it out. Because, dude, back then, you know, like you'd be in some random city and your van would have an issue. Nobody knew how to work on that shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what to do.
No.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you'd end up having to take it into Freightliner or something or the Dodge dealership. And they'd be like, oh, we got to touch those.
Yeah.
They were the only ones that really knew how.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. I had a bunch of T1Ns.
So those were the vans you're snatching up on the East Coast, these early model, the T1N.
The East Coast vans. I had T1Ns. I had some like 07s, 08s, mm-hmm. You know, some of the early VS30s. But I called a bunch of my buddies. I flew them all out. We kind of like everybody drove a van back, got them back to Portland, Oregon. We rented a space and we just like started building. I think we built like 8 vans that first year.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's a big jump.
I had 3 guys. Yeah. It was. Yeah. At the time we all had like some trade experience, mm-hmm. you know, in different areas. And so like we understood basic electrical, basic plumbing, basic carpentry. And we just sort of started being like, well, what should this one look like?
Yeah.
And then we would just do it, you know. And then we would do it again. And, you know, nothing we were doing was like incredibly complicated. Yeah. But I actually, I've seen some of those vans and I'm like, dude, that's actually pretty cool. Like, I don't dislike them. I don't have any, there's no vans that I've built where I'm like, don't look at that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm actually okay with them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure learning along the way, right? You know, stuff you learned on the first, second one, you know, going into the third one, some stuff you could change, some stuff you can do better, and how to make stuff absolutely. Fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, none of them were perfect. I mean, even moving into our vans get better every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of been my methodology is I'm never committed to one thing. I'm just always trying to make the best thing that I possibly can.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of been like a theme in my life and a theme in what I do is I genuinely try and create the very coolest thing, the best thing that I think I can do,
yeah.
no matter what it is that I'm doing.
Right.
I'm pretty all in about stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, that definitely shows, you know, I mean, coming to your space, you know, of course,
I was going to say, we've got RC1 on the wall here, you know, and so to hear you talk about these early vans and then see what you've grown it to, you know, and you could tell you know, that you keep pushing the envelope on what needs to be on these things or what looks good or what functions or how it should look, you know, it's like not being, you know, a cookie cutter type builder, you know, you just kind of create amazing product, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, and you know, like something that hearing your story and something that keeps on coming to my mind is, man, I imagine, you know, growing up the way you did, having the family that you did with all the backing, kind of seeing all the, you know, hard things that they went through and kept on going. Mm-hmm. Man, I imagine that just gave you so much resilience, you know, which I imagine
drive
and probably leads into your business a ton, I would mm-hmm. think.
Yeah, I come from a long line of very, very hardworking people.
Yeah.
Yeah, very hardworking.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad worked well into his 70s. They're just, you know, the culture that I got. I mean, first of all, I was raised in the Midwest, and people in the Midwest work really hard.
Yeah.
Everybody does. And, you know, my parents were no exception to that. And then, you know, they grew up at a time when the only way to get ahead for people in their social status was to be the best.
Yeah.
You had to.
Yeah.
And so that was we were, that was something that was ingrained in us, you know, as a kid. It's actually, yeah. It's funny because like they're kind of, my parents are really, my whole family, it's like very extreme. My parents especially are very extreme people.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. like they would pull me aside and they would be like, if somebody walked up to you and put a gun to your head and they said like, do you believe in Jesus Christ? I was like, you know, I'm like 5 yeah. years old. I'm like 5 cow. Years old. And they're like, you know, because my parents are Coptic, they're Coptic Orthodox.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not Orthodox now. They don't really practice Orthodoxy. They're more like non-denominational, but, my parents are Coptic Orthodox. And so they grew up like fighting for that,
right?
Like fighting for their faith.
Yeah.
And they were in all these, like the stories that they have are insane, of being like blackmailed and bribed and beaten and put back and like arrested and like, yeah. just crazy stories.
Holy.
And like, I mean, they were living like second-class citizens. They yeah. really were. And
yeah.
so they would come up to me and they'd be like, well, if somebody asked you, like, if you love Jesus Christ, like, yeah. they put a gun to your head, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
And they're looking for, I would take a bullet for God.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the answer that they're looking for.
Yeah.
yeah.
And like, you know, because they're like, that's your integrity, son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nuts. I would not talk yeah. to my daughter like that.
No, yeah. I was gonna say hitting you with the hard questions early, man.
Dude, yeah,
I would not He's at that age. Let's yeah, start getting.
I would
with
not
the real
talk
ones.
To my daughter like that. But that's the thing is, you have to understand. Like, they grew up in like an extreme fight or flight situation.
Right. Yeah.
So to them, that was like normal discourse. Like, hey, I need to have a tough conversation with my son.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah,
he needs to know, like, when it gets down to the shit, what is he going to do?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, down to brass tacks. Here's where you need to be.
And it's, yeah, and so they were like that with everything. And I mean, my parents are wonderful people, and they love me and my brothers, my two brothers, like, very much, and they supported us. And they did an amazing job raising us. But, I mean, yeah, they were, I mean... But that was
yeah.
that was life.
Yeah.
And you know, they were like serious about stuff. And so it instilled in us a very real sense of like, A, what opportunities we had and like what life was and
mm-hmm.
you know, things we should be grateful for. And B, it also taught us that we needed to work really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because they every single day that I woke up, they were like, it is a gift that you are here.
Yeah.
It is a gift that you're here. And when I was 100%. Like in my rebellious phase, like when I was like a teenager and I was smoking weed and
yeah.
you know, doing all that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like my dad would look at me and he'd be like, in Egypt, they would kill you. They would kill you. They would look at what you did. They would kill you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and that's real life, right? Like that's not just being, you know, sarcastic or anything, right? I mean, laws in America are a little bit more lenient.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was, yeah, it's pretty funny. It's funny. It's also not funny, but it's funny to kind of reflect on how extreme it was. But again, like that definitely affected me. And I did have good mentors. I think, dude, small business is like the backbone of this country.
Yes.
And I think small business is, I mean, especially with this crazy political climate that we're in and everybody's just like, feels like everybody is just, it's just going crazy. And
yeah.
for me, like, I just wish like if a candidate is going to run on a platform, like they need to talk about small business.
Yeah.
And that's dude.
Yeah.
That's what we need to be discussing. What Absolutely. Are you doing for small businesses? Small yeah. businesses are like, that's how you get ahead in this country.
Right.
Like, that's what's so cool about the US.
Well, that's what, you know, part of it, right? That American dream, right? You can go yeah. over here and grow your business no matter what it is, you know, but you should have that same fair shot, you know, as anybody, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely part of the American dream. And
it
so
is.
Looking around, you know, you've certainly done it and grown with it. You know, I know you started out in Portland, I guess. How long did you stay up there before you changed to this beautiful location?
So we did that first year of van building in 2018. And then I was on and off in Portland for quite a while.
Right.
Like 9 years or so. I wasn't always there during that time, but I always like had a little, I mean, dude, Portland at that time, man, you could like, I had a whole basement in a shared house that I rented out for $300 a month.
Holy smokes. Yeah.
And it wasn't even $300. It was $280. So, I mean, like, dude, Portland was a cool place. I mean, it was a wild place. It was a fun place. You know, everybody was, like, dumpster diving and, like, you know, free food kitchens and porches and, like, anarchy and, you know, freak bikes and, like, crazy, you know, riding down the street at 2 o'clock in the morning wearing tutus with like 100 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a wild town. Yeah. I had a lot of fun there. It was very formative for me, but like,
I mean, you can definitely have a good time in Portland. You know, it's different, you know, same coming from the Midwest, going to Portland. Not what I'm used to seeing on my everydays, but
come back with a bunch of $2 bills stained red.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
It was a cool time, but, you know, it was 2018. We had worked all the way until December. We got done with our last van in December, and it was cold. It was rainy.
It sounds like Portland.
The Northwest has all these, like, you know, before all the Californians moved there, the Northwest had all these, you know, independent-minded, I'm going to do it myself type people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very resilient. And, you know, I just, you know, you just, you're trying to make it, and you're trying to sell vans, and you're trying to sell builds, and, you know, you get hit with all these people being like, well, I can do this myself, and I can do that myself.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I know it's, that's not the whole reason why I left. I mostly was just, I could tell that there was a market in San Diego.
Yeah.
And we wanted to be in the sun, basically. And
makes sense.
Yeah. So we moved down here. We were in, my buddy Roger's van at the time, who's somebody who helped me start Rogue. And Roger had a big, you know, long wheelbase 177, T1N. And we were driving down and we were, you know, dude, we were calling, we only had a couple days to try and find a spot. We were calling everybody and then we were driving on the 5. We knew we wanted to be close to the beach. We wanted to kind of have that.
Hey guys, hate to interrupt the episode, but we do have a new coupon code available. It is CORTADO15, and that's CORTADO15. Use that on your next Backwoods Adventure Mods order to save 15% off, and it's at backwoodsadventuremods.com. Now back to the episode.
Hey guys, so we had a little bit of a technical difficulty. Apologize about that. But Santiago, so you were saying that y'all were driving
in Roger's van.
Yeah, Roger's van. Yep.
Yeah, we were driving in Roger's van looking for a spot. We wanted to be close to the beach. And I see this 5555 logo from the highway. And there was a big, like, for rent sign.
Yeah.
And dude, 5 has always been my number. I love the number 5.
Yeah.
That's like been my number forever.
Oh yeah.
And anyway, so I just saw it and I don't know. It just seemed like it was faded.
Yeah. Right.
It really did. So we called him up and I mean, at the time I didn't have credit. I didn't have like any, I mean, I was bootstrapping everything. Right. I didn't have references. I had nothing.
Yeah.
The only reason why that guy rented me a space, and that my landlord ended up becoming like a good friend of mine who I've had like great interactions with over the years. The only reason why he rented me a space was because, he like loved vans and he thought that he knew somebody who had one of my vans.
Really?
And I was just like, well, I've only built like 8 of them, so I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just like, cool.
Let's go with
it. Right. If that gets your foot in the door, right? Heck yeah, man.
I would have never been able to rent a commercial space otherwise. Nobody would have rented to me. I didn't have any rental history. Yeah. I didn't have credit. I had nothing.
Not enough of the boxes checked.
No, I didn't. No, I was just like an urchin. You know? I had nothing. So
that's, yeah.
Yeah, and then now we, you know, we've expanded over the years. You guys are in our new facility, which is 5066 Santa Fe. Hopefully taking over more space here soon.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like you will be.
Yeah. We're busy. Yeah. Thankfully.
What mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, what were we gonna say?
No.
I was going to ask you, as far as, you know, because I feel like Rogue Vans definitely has a very specific look, you know, just like style. What would you say is like the elements that make a Rogue Van?
That's a really good question. So, yeah, we have a pretty specific way that we build vans. One of the big things, we don't, not all of our vans, it used to be all of our vans would have tongue and groove, either cedar or pine, or like redwood. We did tongue and groove walls for all of our vans. That was one thing that kind of separated us. There are companies that do that, but they're like not quite in the way that we were doing it. We do wall panels now too. Which, you know, we've found success with too. I mean, I don't like the way they look. Another thing is, like our kind of distinctive, bulkhead and entryway style. Like we have like that curved kind of portico. Bulkhead, that delineates the cab from the living space. We've done, you know, full partition bulkheads, whatever, but I mean, we put something there regardless. And that has like a strong defining characteristic. We also do, our like upper cabinets are really distinct. They dive away when at the bottom and they come out at the top. And so, it makes the van like feel larger.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, you know, their cabinets at right angles.
Right.
Or even if they do a curve, but it's still like 90.
Yeah.
So ours at taper, you know, ours are at an angle. Which is, you know, just another thing that is just a little bit different. And then, you know, we basically build the vans the way that they build boats.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think a lot of van builders do it quite that way. You know, we use bulkheads. We kind of box things in. We do a lot of dados. You know, a lot of van companies do like lots of like Craig joints.
Right.
You know, where they're just taking two pieces of wood and you know, doing pocket holes on one side, and that's how everything's put together.
Right.
We don't do that at all. We dado everything together. Everything's CNC'd together. It all clicks together.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing, we butt joint all of our drawer boxes. It's like a distinct kind of craftsman style, of building a van. And
well, it's cool, 'cause all the things you said, you know, it wasn't anything big noticeable on the van, you know, but it's all those stuff that's in the details, right? You know, you named off a bunch of different ways you can get this wood to go together, you know, but it's how you guys choose to do it and stuff and what works best for y'all, you know, the drawers being tapered, you know, it's like you don't lose that head space or, you know, any of the space inside the van with that
elbow room.
Well, it makes sense too, because like I lived in a camper for about 2 years, and man, that was something on that camper that constantly drove me nuts, is like when I would bend down or you know, come back up, I would either hit my head going down or hit my head going up. And having that tapered, you know, box would make, would have solved that. So, I mean, that totally makes sense. And building it like a boat makes sense too, because, you know, boats obviously are very violent, you know, and I would imagine a van is probably pretty similar. So yeah, building them where they can take that beating. I mean, to me, that just makes sense. So yeah, hats off to you guys for that.
Yeah.
We started building vans before building vans exploded, right? We all know.
Yeah.
Like before COVID, dude, there was not that many van companies.
Yeah.
And there were not that many people online like posting about vans.
No.
So like all of these like thoughts and ideas and like build designs, like, you know, everything that we do was like created within our own container, you know, like we didn't have a lot of external influence.
Yeah.
And like that's a distinctive, you know, that's kind of a, you can look at our early Vans and you can look at our later Vans and you can see a continuity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can see, you can kind of see that we've kind of gone with the same playbook that we've had for a long time. And we've made a lot of advancements and we've grown and changed and learned a lot.
Well, that's like with the industry, right? You know, yeah. And you started mentioning those first Vans you built, you know, in 2014 and earlier, you know, it's like, it's not like it is now, you know, where you can source flooring, get walls, you know, built and all this stuff, pre-built, mm-hmm. carpeted and all this stuff, you know, you can just order over the phone, you know, it's like, you guys probably had to make, you know, everything, you know, as being a one-off and everything. And so, I'm sure you learned a lot, you know, about, yeah. you know, the crafting of these things, you know, how to, you know, with the tools you've got, able to use the CNC and everything and build what you want.
We did it the hard way. I mean, we didn't, when we started, obviously, we didn't have a CNC.
So yeah.
We had a giant physical template library that we could use routers to cut out. And so we would cut the entire van by hand. We did all of our dados on the table saw. Built all our cabinets on the table saw, you know, and we grew the business like that. And mm-hmm. I remember the day when I realized that, you know, we'd gotten our first CNC, we'd worked at it, you know, digitized. And I remember when we literally were like, all right, we don't make anything. We don't need any of these templates anymore. Like they're obsolete.
Yeah,
they're
obsolete. That was an incredible feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was an incredible feeling. And it took a while. And yeah, like refining the process and stuff and making it so that we can scale and, like, you know, because a lot of customers come to us and they're like, they want, you know, a custom build. But the thing is, we built so many vans and so many different configurations.
Yeah.
We do everything the same way, right? And then we have this massive, massive library of files to pull on. So we can take these, you know, 3D models and, you know, two-dimensional DXF files that we, all these different, you know, drawings, and we can just modify them to fit within the scope of, like, what our customer wants. So in a lot of ways, like, our custom work almost isn't custom anymore because we've just got this system down.
Yeah.
To where we can make adjustments to our floor plans kind of rapidly on the fly. And we're not going to run into any unknowns.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's all known. It's all known information.
Yeah.
Very rare. Very rare that you run into something that you hadn't ran into before at this point.
Yeah. And, like, we know dimensionally where everything stands. So we don't, if the customer wants something, like, really unique and different, and we have a ton of floor plans that look nothing like anything else we've ever built mm-hmm. coming in for the next year. And you know, we do 3D CAD models of every single one. And, but, like, we're there's no question marks. We're like, we know exactly how this is going to go together at this point.
Yeah.
It's, and in the beginning, it was nothing but question marks.
Right.
Everything that we did, we were like, all right, unexplored territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got no clue.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we, you know, because we had no resource to outsource anything, we just had to learn everything the hard way.
Yeah.
Just do it all ourselves.
But I mean, I think that helps, you know, with where you're at now, right? You know, as you've done it the hard way, you learned the hard way, you know, and now you've got all these tools, you know, the CAD drawings, the CNC, make that stuff easier. But I think you'd still want to go about it the way you did. You know, I think that still adds so much more knowledge, you know, figuring it out the hard way, knowing that you've crossed that bridge.
Yeah.
It made our floor plans a lot more robust and have, like, good groundwork and foundation, because we had to build them with such a limited scope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there, as far as, like, any, basically, you know, rug vans in the future, you know, mm-hmm. is there anything that you are willing to share, you know, that are kind of some things that you have coming up for 2025 that you're really excited about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, 25. Oh, it's going to be such a crazy year.
Yeah.
first of all, we're growing right now. We're growing.
Love hearing that.
Yeah, we're growing. We're actively hiring. We're trying to expand the team. We're trying to get into a bigger spaces. We're trying to expand. I'm hoping to cut down lead times. As of right now, 2024 is basically sold out builds wise. We don't really have any more room.
Yeah.
Man, we have so many freaking objectives and incentives. So, you know, this is, I'll give you guys this. This is going to be the first public place that I say this, but you know, we retired the RC1 this year. That was our concept van that we, that we took to Barrett Jackson, or that we took to SEMA last year and then Barrett Jackson. And then we did the whole show year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We retired it and we officially put it up for sale. I mean, a lot of people saw like for sale things throughout the year, but that was more like promotional.
Mm-hmm.
We actually said we're going to sell this thing and we closed on a contract.
Good.
That van awesome found its new home.
Heck yeah.
Which I'm really excited about. It's, that thing was like an insane labor of love. And
well, and you can see it, you know, the inside of it's amazing. You know, it's a lot of stuff. You know, we've all seen the inside of a bunch of vans and, you know, this one just looks different, you know, nothing overlooked.
It was an obsession. I mean, you have to be obsessed to be able to achieve what we did. And I mean, it was a lot. I mean, I had to be obsessed about it. And anyway, I think it breaks the record for the most expensive van ever sold, at least in North America.
Heck yeah.
That's so awesome.
I don't know.
Hats off to you, man. You and your team, you know, for being able to turn out such a van like it is.
So that kind of opens up the door. We need, you know, we did our Grid Runner, our e-sprinter concept at SEMA this year. That's going to go on the road next year to show people that kind of like modular electric camper. We've got so many things. We've got our Rob Machado build series. So we're going to be finishing that van Q1 next year, launching all that stuff with Rob. You know, we kind of started this program called the Rogue Van Company Gold Label.
Oh, nice.
And it's this cool opportunity for different types of folks who, you know, I like to say that they're experts in their field or they're artists.
Yeah.
And we give them a platform, you know, to come to a professional builder and, you know, do a project or a series.
Yeah.
So for Rob, you know, Rob is this amazing surfer. He's an incredible guy. Super humble, wise, incredible surfer, talks the talk, walks the walk. That dude has dedicated his life to surfing.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting that we can basically extrapolate his day-to-day routine and then use that as the basis of how we build a van that's built for surfing. And then, so Rob's van is going to be done. As you guys know, it's going full. That's a full Rome built build.
Yeah,
which is gonna be sweet. Yeah.
It'll look the part.
Yeah,
and it's that van's gonna get done in Q1, and then we're gonna be opening up the build slots, letting people buy one of the limited editions runs of those, which is exciting. Another aspect of our gold label, we've got a series of, you know, kind of influencers and like, you know, independent YouTube builders that we're like kind of doing some gold label stuff with. And, you know, we've got Abby Miner with the Luna. We did a bunch of Lunas this year.
Yeah.
We've got Lucas Revisa. He has his Odyssey build, which is an epic build. We're doing some of those next year. And we've got Shane with Landship Customs, and we're doing some of those next year too.
Nice.
Those are all great people to partner with, right? You know, with what they've done, their builds and stuff and how they've grown.
They're top tier folks. They make amazing content. They've got great ideas, and we're all about that. We're all about supporting art and, you know, kind of giving people a platform, and, you know, we're up to the challenge of doing those builds.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have no doubts they'll turn out amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I imagine that'll produce some incredible
bands. Cool, because it's like Shane's, you know, touch is different than what Abby's look like and different than what, you know, Lucas's vans look like, you know. So they're all different, but they all have a very unique spin on it and stuff. You know, Abby's, the Lunas, you know, how they look on the inside is I mean, perfect for where we're at right now, you know. And they're gonna be awesome.
Those are outrageous.
Yeah,
they're crazy. I just can't believe them.
Yeah, I mean, following along with that one, you know, I guess another yellow van, you know, maybe you'll never outrun them. You get rid of one, yeah. You got a Luna showing up.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I mean, we have our, he's a legend. And so, you know, ever since that happened with Dylan, I have always wanted to do like a mobility adventure van that would accommodate someone in a wheelchair.
Right.
Yeah.
Rob Ross found me. Rob, I hope you don't mind me saying your last name. I think you're going to, we're going to do a big video thing about it. He knows. So yeah. I don't think he cares, but Rob found me and we talked, I shared the story about Dylan and about our passion for this and how we really wanted to do it. And, you know, we just knew that we were the right fit for each other.
Right.
And, this is going to be a cool van. It's a 170 3500 XD cab chassis Sprinter. We have a box on order with box manufacturer.
Yeah.
In Germany, Andreas and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're shipping that over, next spring. And we're going to do our first cab chassis build. And it's all going to be around mobility stuff.
Yeah.
We've got really interesting features. We've got cabinets that, with a click of a button, come down
on the wall. Yeah.
Sweet.
Lift lower. Mm-hmm. We've got a super cool thing. We're working with Braun Mobility right now to, like, you know, mate together, like, the functionality of having a lift that integrates seamlessly with the cab chassis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really big project.
Yeah.
And it's going to, yeah, it's going
to
be big.
That's awesome, you know, to address something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the one who reached out to you, but I'm sure there's, you know, other folks that are the same boat, right, that want to do this, want to get out more, but, you know, their vehicle's lacking and stuff like that. So hats off to you for doing that, thinking outside the box on that.
This is meaningful, you know. Yeah. Like, a lot of van builders talk about how we make people's dreams, because we do. Like, a lot of adventure, experiencing life,
mm-hmm. right?
You know, like, that is what life is. Life is the summation of our experiences. Your life, your day-to-day life is your life. That is what your life is. And if we can create literally a vehicle for which people can experience life and can, like, you know, connect with life on a deeper level and be mm-hmm. fulfilled, that's a very worthwhile thing. And then to do it for somebody that doesn't have, you know, the same mobility opportunities that other people do and like have special needs in that area
mm-hmm.
and to be able to support them in that, to me, I actually like that really does it for me.
Yeah.
That is meaningful for me.
Yeah. Cause I mean, man, that vehicle is going to be more important to him than it'll ever be to one of us. You know, I mean, that's literally what's getting him there. You know?
Well, getting him there, letting him enjoy it, you know, and do it in comfort too. Right.
Right.
He's not going to have to struggle, fight anything, go wherever he needs to go and point and shoot.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Well, we're going to take our time on that one. He's totally on board with, you know, shooting a documentary around it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to really give it the platform it deserves.
Yeah.
Cause I want other people that are in similar situations, to, like, you know, and this is what Rob wants too. Like, he wants to inspire people to get out there, take charge of their life mm-hmm. and, like, you know, make shit happen.
Right.
And to be like, you know what, like, I can do this.
Yes.
And, like, there are, like, this is open to me. And I, you know, and there's already, like, a ton of amazing organizations. In San Diego, there's a ton of, like, especially, like, veteran support around mm-hmm. this stuff. But, like, there are already a lot of amazing organizations that are all about getting alter-abled people, you know, out and in the wild. In whatever sport or activity, and they're amazing. They're amazing people. And, you know, if any of them are listening to this, we'd love to, you know, bring you in on this project too. It's super open-ended.
Yeah.
I want everybody to have the same opportunities, you know, to get out and, you know, experience life in the way that they want to.
Absolutely.
So
100% behind that. I think it's super cool. You know, for you to go down that, you know, and to have that personal touch that's bringing you in, you know, knowing that it's one of your good buddies, you know, and going to be able to help him, you know, better his life, enjoy it a little more and stuff. I think it's just super cool.
Yeah. We're stoked. And we're going to fly Dylan out at some point to meet Rob.
Yeah.
So that the two of them can kind of talk and, like, you know, Dylan's going to help us design some of the floor plan. Because, dude, that dude still, like, he still dives.
Yeah.
He still goes spearfishing.
Holy cow.
He still goes mountain biking.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like, that guy does not miss a beat. He does not miss a beat.
That is nuts.
That's awesome. Like, you love hearing that. Hate, you know, hate that he had to go through it, you know, but I'm sure he appreciates, you know, life a lot more than us, you know, knows how fortunate he is to be able to do what he's doing now.
Yeah. He's got guts.
Yeah.
He's got guts.
100%.
Well, heck yeah. Well, Santiago, is there, I think we're probably going to go ahead and wrap this one up, but is there anything?
Yeah, sorry to talk so much.
Dude, no, dude, we appreciate it. We talk like crazy too, man. Yeah. I'm telling you. So is there anything that, you know, kind of like, you know, last words for the people?
I think the difference between people that are grabbing life by the horns and making stuff happen and people that, you know, wish that they could or wish that they would, or, you know, just kind of like are discontent with what they're doing. I think the biggest thing is just belief. I think you just got to believe in yourself. And that's always been my mantra. And that's the way I was raised, was to just believe in myself. And I think that's the single greatest gift that you can give to another person, that you can give to yourself, is belief. Belief that you're worth it. Belief that you can do it. Belief that what you want to see happen is possible. And I think that's lit. Like, that is the basis of, if I have found success, it is because of that. And yeah, that's my number one message to anyone that would be listening to this and being like, you know, oh, he's talking about how he did this and he did that and this and that. And I'm just like, it is belief.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Belief and having balls, right? Do it. You can make it happen, man. It may not be easy, but you try hard, and if you believe in it enough, something's going to turn up.
Something will happen. Good things come from, if you just try. You just got to try.
Yeah, I know, like, we were listening to a book on the way up here, and, you know, guy said something that kind of resonated with me. He was, I can't remember what job he was working, but he was doing something he didn't want to do, and he was like, man, I can't go one more day robbing myself of what I want to do, doing something that I don't want to do, you know? So
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Very true.
Absolutely.
Dude, we appreciate you, man, taking time out of your day. Appreciate you taking us around the shop.
Yeah.
You guys got it going on. Everybody's hard at it. Bands in the shop. I hope that always is the case.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming down and, having me on, guys.
Yeah, appreciate, man. Thank you. Yeah, and guys, check us out on BackwoodsAdventureMods.com. Of course, you know, YouTube is Backwoods Adventure Mods. Instagram is also Backwoods Adventure Mods. And yeah, guys, thank you for listening. And we look forward to seeing you on the next one. I'm J.O.
I'm Mo. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.